The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Sports Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericasports.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Keeping It Real with former NFL wide receiver and Auburn University standout, Jairus McIntyre. Are you ready to hear it live from the athletes, celebrities, and fans? Jairus, his co-hosts, and his guests will keep you laughing, thinking, and talking. Now, here's your host, Jairus McIntyre.
Hey, what's going on, listeners? We're back on Keeping It Real. I'm your host, Jairus McIntyre. Got my special co-host today, Robert Johnson. What's going on, Big Robert Johnson?
Man, nothing much, bro. Just keeping it real, cooling out, having fun, enjoying myself. How about yourself?
I'm doing good, man. You know we got less than a week for the big show of the BCS National Championship game, Auburn Tigers, Oregon Ducks. Man, I can't wait. It seems like it's been about a month and a half in waiting, waiting to see Cam Newton put on a show, hopefully, and the defense play a solid game. So I just can't wait. It's all here, so
we talked about going out to Arizona, man, but we said we'd rather watch it live on television, man. So I really can't wait for it to come on. All of these other games, especially this past weekend's game with the SEC teams, I mean, they were cool and everything, but come on, I think everybody know we're waiting for that Oregon and Auburn game.
Oh, definitely, man, definitely. Like you said, man, it's good. Yeah, it would be good to go to the game, but I mean, like you, high def television these days. I mean, hey, you can't miss a thing. So it's gonna be an interesting game, and it's almost here. But I wanted to also introduce another special guest that we have on the line here today, Jay Miller, former Selma superstar, doing big things, Major League Baseball player. But a lot of people don't know that he was a three-sport All-American, the only one in Alabama high school history.
Yeah, not even Bo Jackson did that.
Not even Bo Jackson. So I definitely wanted to introduce Jay Miller. How you doing today, Jay?
I'm good, doing real good. How you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm good. I can remember, when you came on your recruiting visit to Auburn. Obviously, I played with one of your homies, Ben Obamanu, and he had nothing but good things to say about you. And I was hoping that we could have got you up to Auburn, but you took a different route, and obviously it's paying off tremendously for yourself.
Well, yeah, I remember all those visits and, getting up there and, seeing you guys play and, you guys showing me around the school. And I actually, I think you played with Rod, too, and I've been knowing Robert ever since, I was in elementary school.
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, we go way back, man. We got a long line of tradition, man. We bred them from the beginning, man. And look how it paid off. None of us played baseball, and he wanted to go and play baseball. I thank God put you in situations where the route he put you in, you go in that route, and you just expand in that route, man. And that's what he's doing.
And like you said, with him being a three-sport All-American, I mean, he had his choice, and he went the baseball route, and obviously it's paid off.
Right. The options to go in a sport that, like, I think personally his best sport was basketball. Others mm-hmm. think it was football. No one thought that he would go and play professional sports in baseball. Shoot, I don't even think he knew that he would go. How about you, Jay? Did you know that baseball was going to be your pay-to-play?
Honestly, in high school, I thought I was done with baseball after high school. Like, it all happened so fast that, I look back at it and think, like, wow, because I always saw myself, going to school, playing football or basketball, and, here I am playing professional baseball.
How was that transition from high school to, as a high school player going to play college football, it was kind of surreal for me, but how surreal was it for you to go from high school to the pros?
It was It was it definitely took an adjustment period. I mean, probably the first day when I got down to Florida, and you know, I'm just around all these other guys, and I'm like the youngest guy there, and you know, seeing it, because I was still very raw, because you know, coming up, I didn't play a whole lot of baseball, so you know, I'm still learning the game and catching up, and it was just, you know, kind of like I was like a little kid, you know, learning all this, seeing all these things going on around me. But it was definitely adjustment period.
Yeah, and Jay, I grew up playing baseball, and I was all state and went to all the showcases, and everybody was always telling me baseball may be my better sport. And obviously, I just had a love for football. You know, my father went to Auburn. He played at Auburn. So I was always like, man, I want to play football. And I just kind of let baseball go after, you know, I had some offers in college or whatnot and things like that. And I kind of just let baseball, and I, you know, had an opportunity. Was talking about, you know, getting drafted, but I was like, I'm strictly football, and I think that may have shot away some people. But how did you, what made you make that decision? Because I know me, my decision was I just wanted to play football, and that was it. That, you know, that's what it is. How did you make that decision to kind of just say, I'm going to go play professional baseball?
Well, I mean, even leading up into the baseball draft, like I was still, you know, I'm going to school to play football, basketball. But I played in a couple All-Star games in the here in Alabama, and it was against you know, the top guys in the state that, you know, strictly play baseball, and you know, I played in that, and I used that game as a gauge to see, you know, how I stood up against, you know, the best guys in the state.
Mm-hmm.
Played in that game, and you know, I just played great, just dominated it pretty much. So you know, after that game, I kind of was like, okay, you know, this might be something I can do. Think about it, and then there was a workout that I went to for the Marlins, and there were a bunch of guys from the whole southeastern region at this workout. Mm-hmm. And I used that as another gauge to see, you know, how I stood up with other guys that were possibly going to get drafted out of high school, this and that. And I went to that and did well with that too. And, you know, just after that, just sat down with my family and, you know, and then plus at the time, there were a lot of examples of guys who had played pro baseball for a few years, it didn't work out, they go back to school, play something else, and they were still successful. So seeing that, I was thinking, you know, I baseball might be something, you know, I give a shot, see how it goes. If not, I can go back to school, play something else, or be a regular student.
Right. So who were some of your influences? Because I know you personally, man, and I know your story, and I know what you've been through, and, you know, just seeing a guy go from high school to the pros and seeing how the passion that, like, when I see you, I see the passion in your eyes through whatever you're doing, you know what I mean? So, you know, for the people that don't know, who are some of the people that influenced you to get you to the point that where you are now?
Well, I think the biggest influence was, of course, is God. But after that was definitely my mom. And, I mean, I know you got to see that firsthand with knowing me when I was younger. But my mom was, you know, my backbone and my best friend. And you know, I lost her when I was 13. So, I mean, you know, it's crazy because, you know, I tell people I lost my mom at a young age, but I got so much from her in those 13 years. And it's so crazy. So look at it now. Here I am, 25, and I'm going through things in my life now that me and my mom talked about in that short period of time.
Right.
And after I lost my mom and my grandmother, my grandmother was right there after my mom, and they were like neck and neck. And then after that is my grandfather, and that's who I lived with after you know, at the accident I lost my mom.
Yeah.
And you know, my grandfather really helped me to get through a lot of those things after the accident, and me and him have always been close. He's pretty much been like my father all my life, and I mean, he really helped me, and I mean, you know, he's always been there behind me, and definitely those three. I mean, even with my mom and grandma not being here, still, you know, they still affect my, you know, my life to this day.
And I can tell, bro, I can see it in every facet of the way you live, man. And that just shows a testament to the people that really spend the time and stick with their kids at a young age through thick and thin, man. That's strong right there, man.
Yeah, absolutely. And, Jay, I know you know, had a long journey or whatnot. And I know, you know, your mother and your grandmother and everybody else, you know, is in your mind, and they keep you pushing and wanting to move forward to become the best that you can be. And I know playing in the minor leagues and moving up to the bigs or whatnot and moving up and, you know, back and forth and the journey it is to make it, you know, all the way to the bigs is very difficult. And obviously I know that they're a driving force. Are there any other athletes that inspire you that you kind of, you may talk to or you may kind of look at to see some of the things that they've been through and some of the same situations or whatnot?
Well, I mean, I think a lot of you guys know, you know, as you play sports and get older, you're going to meet other athletes. You know, you're going to run against guys who end up getting into professional sports and the sport you're playing or different sports. But, you know, it's actually kind of crazy because a lot of the guys I grew up with are quite a few of them are playing pro sports now. And, I mean, you know, you got Ben Obomanu with the Seattle Seahawks who played high school football and basketball together. Antoine Caldwell with the Alabamas, with the Houston Texans, like me and this guy played YMCA football together, and you know, and we're still very close to this day. And I mean, you know, I have a bunch of other little stories like that of guys I'm close with, but you know, it's one of those things where you know you follow all your guys you're close with, and you know, you talk and you know you fill each other in on what's going on and how things go in their sport and things behind the scenes and things like that, you know, you talk about all the time. But, yeah, there you know, are quite a few.
Okay, okay. And was there ever kind of a time – okay, go ahead, Ron, go ahead.
No, I just wanted to talk about, you know, him being called up to the Kansas City Royals last year and being traded to the Oakland A's this year. What are your expectations going in?
Well, you know, I leave for camp. Spring training is next month. Just looking forward to getting out there and, you know, just opening some eyes and just people just saying, you know, we really want this guy and you know, we want to keep him. And, you know, it's just about playing at the big league level and, you know, and having security there. I mean, that's really what it's about.
And it starts in the offseason.
Definitely, definitely. I mean, you know, you're not going to produce during the season if you're not grinding and working and getting ready in the offseason.
So where are you training at right now?
Well, I'm currently working out at this facility in Montgomery, Alabama called Strike Zone. It's just opened. It's you know, it's a very nice facility. You know, I actually lift there and I get my hitting in there and some of my throwing too. And that's mainly the facility I use.
Yeah, and I'm real close friends with Denard Span of the Minnesota Twins or whatnot. And it seems like baseball player. And I know football is more demanding on the body, that, you know, than baseball. But it seems like your baseball players, to me, seem like they have more work ethic because it takes, I guess, more skill, I want to say, to play the game of baseball, to keep up your skills, you know, from the throwing to the hitting or whatnot. I mean, do you kind of agree with that from playing both sports?
I would definitely say it's the skill involved in it is probably, I mean, hitting a baseball is the toughest thing to do in sport.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think I'm in a good position to say that considering I've played all, you know, all three.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, and kind of like you said with Denard, I mean, I actually played against him this past year. Like, you know, it's definitely a skilled game. Like, I mean, you know, you see these guys, and they may not look like they're the most athletic or whatever the case may be, but these guys are very skilled at what they do. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. Because like when I talk to him, and it seems like every day, like, cause you know, in the off season of football, yeah, we go work out, and yeah, you might go catch some balls, but you know, cats all off kicking it, hanging out in the club, vacation. Yeah, baseball players do what they do, but it just seems like every time you talk to one of them, it's like, well, I got to go hit. I'm about to go long toss. I'm about to go throw. So it just seems like you have to keep up that skill, like. Even though you guys play so many games, you have to keep that skill even throughout the off season.
It's like a definite repetition.
Yeah, because it's one of those things, like, if you don't do or you fall off, like, that slightest little thing, like a bad habit creeps in or something changes and something's different that you have to rework on to correct and fix. Because, I mean, it's very detailed.
Okay, and I want to ask you, growing up in Alabama, obviously, we all know about the Auburn-Alabama rivalry. Were you all Auburn? Were you all Alabama? Or were you just, you didn't really have a team? Because Ben tried to give me that, well, you know, I ain't really, you know, I grew up in Selma, so I didn't really,
well,
I mean, Ben, Auburn-Alabama, man. You from Alabama. You got to be Auburn-Alabama. What were you, Jay?
Okay, coming up, my mom actually went to Auburn. My dad went to Auburn. My dad actually played football at Auburn. So coming up, it was very much, you know, just Auburn growing up. Mm-hmm. But then as I got a little older, you know, I start playing around the state in different tournaments, this and that, and coaches starting to see me. I actually remember a story. I played in this Y-League state championship in Tuscaloosa, actually. Mm-hmm. And I'm guessing, like, some kind of coach or someone affiliated with the University of Alabama spoke to me or my mom or something like this, and I think I may have said something in reference to Auburn. And after that, my mom was like, now, I understand, you know, how you feel, but it's about going to college. It doesn't matter where or whoever's interested in you. Like, so kind of after that and then going through the whole recruiting process, and you get to see, you know, you get to see Alabama and Auburn, like, a little bit more behind the scenes. Like, I really think that's when it kind of, like, I kind of backed away as a fan and was just looking at the universities as a whole. And mm-hmm. And after that, really, I kind of just was really not really leaning towards one school or the other after that. Once I really, as I got older and I really got to check out the schools.
Yeah, because it, like you said, when you're making the decision in a college, it's for, because my dad and mom went to Auburn as well. So it goes to what's best for you in the future, not kind of who did you like growing up or whatnot. So mm-hmm. I understand that situation as well.
Jared, I'm going to tell you something about this guy not a lot of people know. As a video game fanatic, and when I say video game, college football fanatic. Like, he seriously could go and make his own Jay Miller 2011 football game. I mean, there's not too many people I've come across, and I play them all the time, and I literally get a headache when I play them. And I've been playing football since I was 7, so I feel like I know a lot about it. But I'd be daggone if I'm going to get beat by a baseball player every time I beat him. We played recently, and this guy ran the football on me the whole game, J-Mac. The whole game. And I was upset, and he beat me. He beat me pretty bad, man. So when we're talking about football games, we're talking about execution, and we're talking about the logistics of the game, with this game coming up next week, Jay, how will Auburn pull off a victory against the Oregon Ducks?
Well, I think with the way both offenses play the game, the game is going to be won in the trenches. And, I mean, you know, you can talk about this and that, but I think, you know, for the most part, every football game is won or lost in the trenches. And, I mean, whoever can, you know, dictate at the line of scrimmage and, you know, put the skilled guys in position to make plays, that's who's going to win the game. I mean, will Oregon scheme, because it's much different than what anything Auburn has seen during the year, you know, who adjusts the quickest to what the other team is trying to do? And I think that's what it's really going to boil down to. I think both teams are going to make plays. Both offenses are going to make big plays. And I think really it's just who adjusts. And who just doesn't back down from being on that stage, and who can respond? Because both teams are going to hit each other in the mouth. Mm-hmm. It's just about who's going to execute and who wants it the most.
Yeah. Now, with that being said, and we've watched this whole college football season, and we're talking about the big game next week. What do you think that the Oregon Ducks can do to kind of try to slow down Cam Newton? Because nobody's really slowed him down except Alabama in the first half. And I will admit, Alabama did pretty much stop Cam Newton and Auburn's offense in the first half. But besides that, I haven't really seen anybody slow Cam Newton down. What do you think that they could do to try to slow him down or even stop him?
Well, I think a few of the things that Oregon has working for them is that they use a lot of guys on defense. And their mm-hmm. defense is built around more speed than it is strength, power, and size. So, I mean, they're going to be rotating a lot of guys, so I don't really think the tempo is going to bother their defense because they play so many bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the fact that they see the same type of system, you know, in their own offense, and I think that these two teams, I think, are going to be very, very prepared to attack the two offenses because, I mean, they pretty much know what they're going to see because they do the same things themselves. So I think the defenses, even though they haven't put up good numbers all year, I think both defenses are going to be they're going to be more adaptable to help to handle the two offenses. But I think Oregon, they just have a lot of speed on defense, and I think that's really going to help them. I think they're probably
what I really think, I think they're probably just going to put their DBs on the island and just, you know, just load up to handle the run. And, I mean, I pretty much think that's what they're going to try to do.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, and I kind of think that's what Auburn should do with the high power offense that they have. I mean, obviously, you know, they got a lot of screens and they run the ball real well. I'm not sure what they have out of receiver. I know they have one receiver that has put up some good numbers or whatnot. But, Ra-Ra, I want to ask you, what would you do if you were Gene Chizik or the defense court coach Roof? What would you do to kind of try to slow down or stop Oregon? Because I don't see either team being stopped. I just see them being slowed down. What do you think that Ted Roof and Coach Chizik should do to slow down that high-powered offense?
Honestly, I'm looking from the view that of a fan. I'm looking from the perspective of someone who watched these guys play, from someone who watches them at practice, who's been around these guys personally. I honestly think that they need to go and really work on that secondary and do a lot of tackling drills, because I think this game is going to be a lot of big plays, and it's really going to be up to the secondary, because I feel like, you know, you got McFarland, you got Nick up front, and you got the linebackers who are good, but they're not going to see – they haven't seen the type of speed that Oregon's able to administer on a defense that lacks, you know, certain entities. So I think if by chance James that's the guy's name, James, right?
LaMichael
running
James.
Back. Huh? Yeah, LaMichael James.
LaMichael James.
If he gets past that front line, I think it's going to be imperatively crucial that secondary go in there with the heads up, no low tackling, and just put a hat on them. I think that throughout this week of preparation, that has to be an emphasis of detail, you know, because when you're tackling, you have to pay attention to detail. When you look at all these guys who are getting hurt and all these guys who are missing tackles, they're going in there with the eyes closed, the heads down, and it's coming from the secondary guys. You don't see that from the guys up front. You only see it from the secondary guys. So I think that this week, we're going to get back to the basics. This week, we're going to do the small things. We're going to do a lot of form tackling. We're going to go in there, and we're just going to do the things that we were taught as kids to do and just try to utilize it to the best. And if we can eliminate the big plays from Oregon, I think we will have no problem.
Yeah, and I was thinking of the same thing like that you were saying. Tackling is going to be big, but also what Jay said, it's going to be one in the trenches. And I see our defensive line with, you know, big Nick Fairley and Carter and all those boys, you know, that have played good this season. The defensive line has played good this season.
Tremendous.
It's been the back half. So if we can get a push with that defensive line and wreak havoc in the backfield, that'll slow down their tempo, and then we'll be able to, you know, kind of – it'll slow down their tempo, and that will help us a lot, because the tempo is the main key of that offense. Without tempo, they have nothing. So right. With that being said, I think if we get a push with Nick Fairley and Carter and Big Clay and all the boys in the middle and, you know, off on the edges and get pressure on Darren Thomas, it's going to be tough for them to keep that tempo up. Because, I mean, when you go on with tempo like that and you run in two or three plays in a row, if you lose yardage with pressure in the backfield, then you can't just get up and run another play real quick, because it's going to be second and long. So
right.
It's going to slow down the tempo, and I think that'll help us out tremendously.
I think so. I predict Auburn to come out with a 48-35 victory, something like that. It's going to be exciting. I think the game is going to be very exciting. It's going to be worth the money, worth the trip. You know, people coming from Alabama, traveling across the country just to go see his team play. And, you know, from what I hear, as soon as they arrived at the hotel, at the airport, you know, Auburn fans were there and they were just showing love crazy. So I'm getting excited already, man.
Yeah, I'm getting excited. You know Auburn fans. I mean, hell, Cam Newton had a Tiger walk at the Heisman ceremony in New York. So they're gonna be all over the place. I'm going to kind of get off this subject, and I wanted to ask Jay. You said, when do you guys start up spring training or whatnot? Are y'all in Florida? Because I know a lot of teams come to Florida.
We're in Arizona.
Y'all out in Arizona. Okay, and when exactly does that start?
I want to say officially it starts February 21st.
Okay, and I always wanted, because I ask Denard all the time, as long as that baseball season is, I mean, is it a wear and tear on the body? Because I know in football we play 16 games and we have OTAs in the off season and you know, weight training and air whatnot, and you know, but I I just want to know all those games because it just seemed, and I remember when he was in the minor leagues and he was telling me that, you know, they took buses to places or whatnot. I know once you get, you know, in the bigs, it's not like that, but you still seem like you're playing every other day, sometimes every day. Is it a wear and tear on the body, though?
Yes, and it's not every other day. It's every day. Like
yeah.
You said, you get one, maybe 2 days off a month. It's every day, and that's not even including the 30 or so games during spring training. It's sick every day, and it is a grind.
And I know as far as from football, the perspective of football, you get cut, you know, the next week you may be on another team. Like, Jay, when you came from high school, can you tell us your transition from every team that you've been on to the point to where you are now? Just to let kids know who may be listening that, you know, this guy went through all of this, but yet he's still pushing.
Well, I mean, you know, when I got into the minor leagues, and I struggled. I'm not going to be honest. Like, you know, it definitely was an adjustment for me, and I really struggled. It was like the first time in my life I ever really struggled at anything.
Right.
And I mean, that's pretty much what baseball is. If you succeed 3 out of 10 times, you're a Hall of Famer in baseball. So you're going to fail 7 out of 10 times if you're one of the best.
Right.
And, you know, getting used to that was definitely something I wasn't used to, and dealing with all the failure in baseball. And, I mean, it's definitely a grind. It's a marathon. I mean, it's like before I got into pro ball, I did not know that they play every day. I thought it was like high school. You play maybe 3 games a week, 4 games a week, but it's every day. It's that routine every day.
Yeah, and I want to ask you another transition because, you know, playing baseball, I hit with, you know, obviously aluminum through high school. You know, you're dropping ball with the aluminum, but when you get with the wood, it's a little different. What is that a transition in itself? Because, you know, I hit with wood in bat practice or whatnot, but I've never, you know, ever really played in games with a wooden bat. Was that a transition to you, or is it kind of like once you get used to it, that, you know, that's just what it is?
It was a transition, but once you get used to it, like, that's what it is. Like, I couldn't imagine going and hitting with aluminum now.
Okay.
Like, like the bats feel like it's totally different. It's like night and day. I'm serious. But, I mean, the difference is, I mean, you just can get away with much more with aluminum. I mean, if you hit a ball off the end of a bat with wood, the bat's going to break. If you get jammed, you're going to feel it with wood. I mean, with aluminum, you can get away with all those things and still be successful. But with wood, that's why I was saying earlier, it's so defined. Like, you have to live on the sweet spot of the bat, because if you don't, you're not going to be successful.
If you don't, you out and you fail. Like, so that's what it is. Okay. Well, we're going to head to break here on Keeping It Real with my special guest, Jay Miller, and my special co-host, Robert Johnson.
Yo.
Your internet flagship station for sports, Voice America Sports.
You already get the general sports headlines and discussion on TV and radio. Tune in to The Blueprint with Randall Gatewood. Yeah, we'll cover all the general big name stuff too, but we go beyond the typical sports radio show to bring you the details you don't get anywhere else. We'll talk about the inspirational stories and the little known successes. If you want creativity, The Blueprint is the place to be. Tune in every Thursday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Sports Channel.
Are you a real sports fan? Get ready to talk football and anything else sports with Kwame Lassiter. Formerly with the Arizona Cardinals, San Diego Chargers, and St. Louis Rams, Kwame's got the experience, so he's prepared to talk sports with you. Every week on Kwame Lassiter's Sports Talk. It's on the Voice America Sports Network every Tuesday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, noon Eastern Time. Get ready for unpredictable fun and sometimes a sarcastic look at the world of sports. That's Kwame Lassiter's Sports Talk on the Voice America Sports Network.
It's more than a sports show. Tune in every Friday for End of the Bench with Tony Bowie. Tony knows and does it all. Whether it's sports, business, or politics, the discussion all comes to focus in one place. You'll hear from the personalities as well as the everyday people, each bringing their own perspective to the discussion. This is a weekly forum that you'll want to be a part of. End of the Bench with Tony Bowie airs live every Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time. That's 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Sports Channel.
Your internet flagship station for sports, Voice America Sports.
You're listening to Keeping It Real with Jairus McIntyre and his guests. To get in on the show today, please call 1-888-346-9144. That's 1-888-346-9144. Now, back to the show.
Yeah, we are back here on Keeping It Real. Had a little technical difficulties or whatnot going on over here. But we're back, and I kind of want to talk about these bowl games. You know, the bowl season is almost over, and it's always big when the bowl season come around because people want to claim and, you know, claim the, which is the best conference or whatnot. We always say the SEC is, and I want to say we have a 500 record so far in bowl games. And Mr. Jay Miller actually signed with Stanford coming out of high school, coming out of Selma. And last night, Stanford put on Virginia Tech pretty bad. Did you watch any of that game, Jay?
Yeah, I definitely watched the game.
What was your assessment on it? What did you think about that game? I mean, I know Andrew Luck is a great quarterback, but what do you think about the rest of the team at Stanford? Because they actually showed me that they had some players over there. I mean, I always kind of underestimated them because I didn't think they had the athletes the way we do over here in the SEC, but they went up against a very athletic Virginia Tech football team and beat them down pretty good.
Yeah, and I think with the guys they have on that team, I mean, because you have to be – I mean, getting into Stanford is no easy task. And, I mean, I could just tell with the scheme of all the formations, all the shifts, all the motions, like, they get leverage on you when you think about it.
Yeah.
And they'll come out and one thing shift and they motion to something else. And all this, the defense has to reset, change the front, change the coverage. And, I mean, it's a lot to do. And all it takes is one person to get out of position, and there's a crease. And that's pretty much what was going on in the running game last night.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, that running for about two long runs, and I was like, man, what are they doing? But just like what you said, I mean, you make a shift, and you're out leverage. You make a block, and you have an alley, you're gone. So,
exactly.
So I guess those smarts come in handy when you're playing a game of football.
Jairus, you know me being a tight end by blood, quarterback by nature myself, you know. it was something amazing watching that tight end catch three touchdowns last night, man. I mean, that was something like, you know, that was a feat in itself.
Yeah, and he had three catches three catches with three touchdowns, and they were some long touchdowns. I mean, it wasn't like it was, you know, short 5-10-yard touchdown. I mean, he caught that ball and was running, and he showed me some athleticism as well. So people sleep on Stanford, think that they just have a lot of smart boys out there. But they have some athletes out there that can play the game of football and make plays.
Right. So Virginia Tech had a cornerback, number 20, I forget his name, but he had nine interceptions on the year. What do you think he compared to Peterson over at LSU?
I mean, me personally, I just see Peterson and his stature at being 6'1", about 210, 220, running a 4.3 and playing against top-notch competition. I mean, obviously, I would probably pick Patrick Peterson, but I think this kid, number 20 over at Virginia Tech, is only a true sophomore. So he still has a couple years in him. So obviously take the obvious pick with Patrick Peterson, but this kid is a ball hawk. I mean, anytime you have even five interceptions – that's a lot in the college football season. So, and he had nine, and actually picked off Luck on a great play when he blanked at a receiver. So, I think when it's his time to come out, he probably will be a first round lock. But right now, I'm a Patrick Peterson because I've seen more of him. He has that size. He returns kicks, and he's just electric, and he'll probably be a top five pick this year in the draft. So.
Yeah, I'm gonna pick the other top DB out there is Prince Amukamara from Nebraska, but I actually like Patrick Peterson over him too myself.
I personally had a chance to catch at my NFL Pro Day this past year in Auburn with Cam Newton in preparation to the Pro Day. And this guy, you know, I think that his arm is his biggest asset. His running is his bonus. But I think personally, once this season's over with and he's getting evaluated by the NFL scouts on his Pro Day, me personally, this is just my personal opinion, I think he will be the first overall pick, the first quarterback taken. You know, Luck's cool, but Cam's the deal.
Yeah, and like you said, you've seen him firsthand. I want to ask Jay that same. Well, you know, ask Jay that question. I'm gonna put my opinion and my assessment in on the question on your statement or whatnot. Cam Newton is a great quarterback. And I'm an Auburn guy, so if I was a GM, I would probably pick Cam Newton myself.
Right.
But, I mean, a lot of outsiders looking at it all, and the pro-style offense that Luck has been in, he's been under Harbaugh, which was, you know, a veteran NFL quarterback. He's done it for 2 or 3 years. It's going to be very, very difficult to pick against Luck. Not saying that I would if I was the GM, but, I mean, if you know, 32 NFL teams – you know, and obviously we know the GMs, 9 times out of 10, are probably not African-American, which I'm not, you know, saying that is a reason or whatnot. But the things that, you know, the off-the-field small things that I don't think really have anything to do when it comes up with Cam Newton's situation, with him stealing a laptop back in the day or buying a stolen laptop back in the day. I mean, kids do stupid things or whatnot.
Let's keep it real, though, Jerry. Issues in the NFL, as much as they talk about character issues, I mean, every sport speaks on character, but I think the NFL, they stress the character issues. But mm-hmm. It seems like the guys who have the issues are the guys who end up going higher in the draft. Is that just a false evaluation on my part?
Yeah, you're
so
right.
I mean, how much does character really play a portion, you know?
Yeah, you make a great point in that. I'm just saying when you're talking about picking a quarterback first overall and going to give him probably now, I mean, what, maybe 35, probably $40 million guaranteed. It's looking like coming up in this draft, the first overall pick, they're going to look at any and everything. And they're going to say, okay, am I going to go with a 6'6", Michael Vick-type quarterback with poise in the pocket, has a strong arm, you know, has a great smile, have the crowd ready, gets in with it with the crowd. I mean, everything that they're going to say was good about Cam Newton, they're obviously going to go dig deep. What did his father take money? Did, you know, the laptop situation that for? They're going to dig deep and try to slander him a little bit, but his play on the field is just too much.
With great athletes come great.
Yeah, in my
great
opinion.
Great athletes come great scrutiny.
Yeah, exactly, in my opinion. But with the Luck kid, he is a Stanford guy, so you already know they're going to say he's cerebral. He's smart. He can do this. He can do that. On top of him playing, going 12-1, playing under Harbaugh, having a great arm, great accuracy, he has a little swag and charisma himself, you know. So it's going to be very, very interesting. I see him going first because they're not going to try to – they're going to dig deep and find nothing, whereas with Cam, they might find a little something. I would pick Cam, but I think the pick is going to be Luck. And I wanted to ask Jay, you know, the same question. Who would you pick if you were a GM? Kind of putting you on the spot, I'm keeping it real. But if you were the GM, who would you go with, Cam Newton or Andrew Luck?
I mean, me personally, I really like Cam because, I mean, he's just a dynamic guy. I mean, you're very right on when you talk about Luck, you know, very cerebral guy. Been in a pro style for 2-3 years, played under an ex-NFL quarterback, and I mean, you know, having that pedigree is definitely going to help the NFL, but I mean, really, it's just going to boil down to, I mean, you know, who does better at the combine and pro day, really, because I mean, once the teams actually get to see these guys work out in front of them, and they get to. I mean, I think that there are a lot of things that probably the two of those guys can do that we don't even really get to see on game day. That a lot of those guys are going to get to see at the combine and pro day, and then get to see those guys interview and things like that. I mean, like you just said, there's so much that goes into it that they're going to pick apart every single thing. And I think that Cam Newton is a much better passer than a lot of people are giving him credit for.
Absolutely, absolutely. And because there are people at times, if you don't sit there and watch Auburn, if you just don't watch him and you watch the highlights, you're going to be like, oh, he's just running the ball.
But this cat can throw just as good as Luck or better. So it's going to come down to it. It's going to be probably a night before decision for whomever, well, for the Carolina Panthers, which have the first overall pick. And people are even saying, well, Cam still might come back. I don't think he should. I think he would be crazy if he did. Yeah. I would pick him first, but I'm not, and I'm, you know, I am an Auburn guy. I'm going to pick Cam first. If I wasn't an Auburn guy, I would probably pick Cam first. But I don't want people to sleep on Luck because he is going to be a great NFL quarterback, and he can run. He's not one of your, you know, classic just sit back in the pocket and can't run. He can move. We got Ron Mack on the line. Ron Mack, are you there?
I'm here. How y'all doing?
You called in at perfect time. Yeah, we called in at perfect time. We got some we got a Montgomery legend. You know, Big Robert Johnson, as well as a Montgomery / Selma legend, Jay Miller from Selma, and we're talking about this Cam Newton, Andrew Luck dilemma. I already know which way you going with this. So,
man, it ain't even close, man. It is not even close. And I've said it on here before, and it'll come to pass. If anybody, as a matter of fact, they even got Cam Newton rated as the third best quarterback in the draft per the experts. They have Luck 1 and Gabbert, the guy of Missouri, 2, and Cam 3. Okay, now, how in the world could you even fix a board up with that setup? It's ridiculous. But because, you know, I'm just going off of, you know, the eyeball test, okay? Can he throw as good as Luck or better? Yes. Is he as big as Luck? Yes. Is he probably stronger than Luck? Yes. Is he faster than Luck? Yes. Is he a leader? Yes. And the answer is yes to all these questions. The only thing that is helping Luck's dad played in the NFL. His dad has been in the pro, you know, that administrative type, you know, I got money, you know, my kid is, you know, prepared. He went to Stanford, played for Harbaugh, but when it all boiled down to it, football is football. It don't matter if you, you know, been taught by Jim Harbaugh or Tommy Bowden, Terry Bowden. What it boiled down to is making plays, being a leader, especially at that quarterback position, and wins and losses. And with Cam Newton showing this year, if a GM picks Andrew Luck or Gabbert or whoever over Cam Newton, they will be looking for a job when the people who done picked Cam Newton gonna still have their job.
I feel everything you're saying, Ron, but I think it also has to do with, I think, say if the Panthers get the first pick, okay, they just fired their coach, right? And if you look at the latter part of the season at the home games, the seats were not being filled. Who can fill the seats? Who can bring people butts in the seats? Can Luck do it? I was listening to the Luck interview last night on TV, and the guy just seems like he's just so scripted. You know, I don't want to see a script. I want to see a natural persona. I want to see something that's vibrant, something that's exciting. And with Cam Newton, that's what you got.
And with it being in this part of the country, Carolina is in this part of the country, so more more of their fan base is watching Cam Newton on the West Coast. You know, they watching Andrew Luck. But like it always boils down to in sports and life, and especially at the quarterback position, it's a black and a white thing. And ain't no way I'm going to pick a black quarterback when it's a white quarterback out there and it's close. If it's a blowout, like, you know, back when Vic came out, it wasn't even close, so we got to pick Vic. But if it's close, we going to pick Joey Harrington over Donovan McNabb. Wow. Detroit, since then, they done went through two or three GMs. and McNabb stayed in Philly 11, 12 years. You know what I'm saying? So the same thing, that's my premise for saying, if Carolina or whoever pick Andrew Luck before they select Cam Newton, they'll be looking for a job. When the person who got Cam
I think y'all make a great point with it being with it being Carolina. I mean, hell, Cam could bring the whole Atlanta because he's from. He could bring the whole Atlanta to Carolina every week. You know, every home game, first and foremost, and then Auburn, not too far from there. I mean, like you said, they're on this side of the country. But with that being said, I'm picking Cam first all day long. He has that swag. He's going to bring the crowd. Everybody is going to want to see Cam do it. I'm picking him first. But Andrew Luck, to me, yeah, he's scripted and he's this and that. But to me, he is going to be a great quarterback. So with that being said, Ron Mack, I don't think if they make that pick at Carolina, it may be the wrong pick. But I don't think that the organization will, you know, pay for it the way, you know, like you said, a Joey Harrington or whatnot, because he's not a Joey Harrington. I still see him as a franchise quarterback. I see Cam Newton as a franchise quarterback. Jake Locker, I don't know. Ryan Mallett, I think he could be good, but I don't know if he's going to be – he could be a franchise quarterback. I think he'll be good. The boy from Missouri, I've seen him play, but they crazy. They think he's in the conversation with Cam Newton. I don't even know who made up that board, so that's crazy. But with that being said, I think if you pick an Andrew Luck, you're not – if Carolina picks Andrew Luck over Cam Newton, they made the wrong decision and – They made the wrong decision because I think Cam Newton is going to be a better pro, and he is a better college player too. But if they pick Andrew Luck, it's not going to be the wrong decision. I mean, it's not going to hurt the organization the way it would be if you picked, you know, somebody else that wasn't on the same type of player, because I think an Andrew Luck can improvise in a pocket, good arm, smart quarterback, can throw the ball. He's going to be a good player. He reminds me kind of like of an Aaron Rodgers. You know, Aaron Rodgers is just a regular old cat, but he's out there in Green Bay, and he's a superstar kind of on the low, throwing for great, you know, a whole bunch of yardage, and accurate, smart guy. So I don't think the organization will just, you know, I don't think the organization will go in the dumps with Andrew Luck.
But the thing about it, Cam has deficiencies, like Michael Vick in Philly. If Cobb was the quarterback, you see how atrocious that Philadelphia's offensive line is. You see that, you know, they don't protect worth of nothing. They don't pick up the blitz. With Andrew Luck, you don't get the plays that Cam makes just off ability.
Yeah.
You know, picking Cam means that, okay, I don't have a franchise left tackle, but I can get by with a average left tackle. If I pick Luck, I gotta have a franchise left tackle to watch his blind side, because he can't make nothing happen.
Okay, now, but see that's the difference. If you pick Mallett, you would have to worry about that. If you pick somebody like Luck, he can improvise in the pocket the way that Aaron Rodgers does. If you drop back, he has a pocket presence to know, okay, I got to slide and I got to get upfield. Now Cam Newton will take off and run that thing. You know what I'm saying? Like an Andrew Luck may slide, you know, get out of the pocket and throw it away. You know what I mean? Ryan Mallett, he's sacked. Old school Drew Bledsoe, he's sacked. Brett Favre, he's not sacked. He might get out of the pocket, but he might throw a pick. You know what I'm saying? So Peyton Manning, he's not sacked because he's going to get rid of it. So those things come into effect when you're talking about a quarterback. But I'd rather have a Cam Newton or a Michael Vick, because when something like that occurs, he's going to get out of the pocket and run for 20, 30, and may have a 50-yard run like he did against an LSU or whatnot. So I'm definitely going to pick Cam. I just think somebody like Luck, from the way, like I said, he has a pocket presence to know, get rid of the ball or dump it off or, you know, throw it away, kind of like a Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning probably run a 6-flat, but he's so smart to where he knows, okay, I'm going to get rid of this, or I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. He knows what he's doing. So, and I kind of think Andrew Luck has that type of ability in him. But I'm going Cam Newton all day.
It'd be crazy for a GM to not take the most dynamic quarterback. And when I say dynamic, it comes from a mental standpoint, a physical standpoint, and an excitement standpoint.
So Cam Newton is the pick. That's what it is.
For a team that just go 2-14, for a team that got two good running backs, you got a good sound running game, your offensive line is okay, but what they need, like you said, is somebody that going to put some butts in the seat. And Andrew Luck won't do that for the Carolina Panthers.
So Cam Newton, Cam Newton needs to be the first pick, bottom line. I just think Andrew Luck is good too, is all I'm saying. Cam Newton needs to be the first pick because he is going to bring butts in the seats and he's going to win games. Now, he may need a couple linemen and a couple receivers. He already has Steve Smith, another receiver. But with that, he'll give them 5 to 6 wins easy in my book. And I'm saying it right now. But I don't think he's going to go first overall. I think they're going to pick Luck. For whatever reasons that they want to, I just think he's going because, and everybody's already saying they already put, placing him with the first pick already. So you know how that is. When Mel Kiper says you're going to be the first pick, well, we know this. If Mel Kiper said you're going, first round or top 10, you're going first round, top 10. You know, I mean, if they said it on ESPN, you don't think them GMs and everybody watching ESPN, them old owners don't know. I mean, they don't know. They're like, oh, well, they're saying on ESPN that Luck needs to be the first pick. They're going to pick him first. That's how that works. So Luck's probably going to go first, but Cam Newton needs to be the first overall pick. Because like you said, Rob, the most electric player, in the country, probably the last 15, 20 years that we've probably seen in the Southeastern Conference. So
hands down, man. You see it live and in effect. It's live in the living color, man. If you like color TV, and it's not no race thing, but if you like color TV, you go to Cam Station. If you want to go watch black and white TV, you go to Lux Station. It's simple as that, man. It's not multiplication. It's not division. It's just addition. That's all. It's simple. 1 + 1 = 2. And what's 2?
Hey,
Cam Newton. Let's go, baby.
Jay Miller, what you think about those Miami Heat, bro?
I think they're starting to gel. They're looking real good. And then when they get Haslam back, they're definitely going to be tough to deal with. I think Boston's going to still give them problems just with all the size they have.
Yeah. And Robert, I want to ask you that since your late show got drilled on Christmas Day in front of a live audience on national television.
I'll tell you one thing. If Lamar Odom is the most exciting player, the most consistent player on the L.A. Lakers team, then there's no way these guys will be able to repeat it. There's no way. I mean, I like Lamar Odom for the things he can bring to the table, true enough. But if Kobe, Paul, Andrew, old crazy Ron Artest, if these guys aren't on the same accord, man, the sky will not be the limit for them. And I hate to say that, I'm pretty excited by watching highlights of Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh and LeBron, but I'm like, I don't know if I had to just go get my jersey changed or something, man. I really need my Lakers to pick it up.
Hey, Ron Mack, you still on the line?
Yeah, I'm here.
Is LeBron the best player in the league now or what?
I mean, look, man, you will never be able to, tell if LeBron is the best player in the league because he gave up his right to the best player in the league status when he joined forces with another two superstars.
How though? He's still averaging his 25 points.
Because he cowered out and bowed down to the pressure of trying to get a ring instead of, the pressure of becoming a man and taking a team to a championship. Everybody keep on talking about the Heat. Let me tell you about the Heat. They look good. The Phoenix Suns back in the day when they were, winning 65 games, 70 games, running and gunning, scoring all those points, they look good too. But in the playoffs, baby, it's a slowdown game. It's half court. And they don't have the size in the paint. Boston and against L.A., that you might as well call them two teams, walk them across, because they're going to go hard in the paint.
Use that one. No, but look, when it's game time, and like Jay said, when Haslam get back,
Bosh down there banging. You got Big LeBron. He can play center if you want to. You get all those boys banging.
Haslam 6'6", J-Mac. Haslam 6'6". Rob taller than Haslam, man.
Hey, he's 6'6", but he play like he's 6'9". Charles Barkley was
6'6". No, man, he don't play that big, man.
Yeah, Charles Barkley was 6'6". And he played like he was 6'8", 6'9". That's how Haslam. He's a dirty get right dog. He gonna try to do what he gotta do, and I think
What he gonna do with Andrew Bynum when Andrew Bynum get healthy? Down in that paint at 7'1".
And Andrew Bynum gonna play.
And Pau Gasol get his rest, and he's 6'11" and long as all outdoors. And Lamar Odom coming off that bench at 6'10", handling that rock. What they gonna do? They ain't gonna do nothing. They gonna lose. They ain't gonna make it out the East.
Hey.
I tell you that. And with the additions that Orlando done made, with the additions that the Magic done made, they might not get past the Magic.
Hey, the Heat all day, every day. You got the best two players in the league on one team. They gonna win.
In LeBron James' defense, he did give Cleveland 7 years. I mean, some guys, that's their whole career. He gave them 7 years. And if you couldn't get it done, you couldn't help them out in 7 years, then you have all right to void that contract and get out. And obviously he was up for a trade, but
I ain't got no problem with him getting out of Cleveland, but you don't go somewhere where it's another superstar and share the load. You don't do that. He could have went to Chicago.
I got a quick
question. And that could have been his team.
We
about to close this Keeping It Real session. Special thanks to Jay Miller, my special guest, my special co-host Robert Johnson. And Crazy Ron always calling in, talking smack. We out here.
Thanks for listening this week. Tune in to Keeping It Real with Jerris McIntyre again next Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Sports Channel. Until then, keep it real. Keep it real.